Everybody, welcome to the Break It Up podcast. This is my dad's show. I hope you don't get butthurt. This show has a lot of opinions. Some you might agree with, and some you won't. This show is not suitable for children. My name is Adrian, and welcome to the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Break It Up podcast. I am Adam, your host. And I will always be your host. I'll always be here for you. You can always count on me. Unless you need money, then I really wouldn't come towards me with it. Today's a special episode. Every episode's going to be special. I don't know why I'm saying today. Every episode's going to be special. You're always going to love all of my episodes. But today I have a special guest. His name is Chris Cluey. And if you don't know who that is, first of all, punters are people too, okay? Now, he is a former NFL punter. He played 8 seasons with the Minnesota Vikings. Now, I'm not trying to get too disorganized in how I'm talking here, but I am a huge football fan. I am a huge fan of the Cincinnati Bengals, and I'm a huge fan of the Minnesota Vikings. So being able to interview Chris Cluey today is pretty special to me, to be able to do this. Now, he didn't have the most storybook ending with the Vikings, and we'll get into that. But regardless, it is pretty cool to be able to interview him for this, and we will play that interview shortly. We're going to talk about a variety of subjects, but one of the things I want to get into before the episode starts is, and the kind of the reason I'm doing this episode is, there's a lot of debate on the role of sports in the political culture, the political atmosphere. Should NFL players, should NBA players, any athletes, doesn't matter what sport you play. Some people say they should just shut up because they're overpaid players who are spoiled and they don't know what they're talking about. There's other people that say they have every right to, that they think that they're role models for speaking out on issues. The main issue, which is no secret to anybody, is the national anthem kneeling controversy. Now, a lot of people are thinking that when NFL players, and I keep using the NFL as my main example just because I am the football fan, their main issue is they believe that it's disrespectful to our military, our, you know, our servicemen and women, that it's disrespectful to the country, and they say it's disrespectful to, you know, like our the police, you know, anybody that serves this country in any form. They believe it's just, there's no other way to say it. They just believe it's disrespectful. I don't know what other kind of word I'm going to look for it. And then a lot of people are not choosing to listen to why this is happening. A lot of it stemmed from Colin Kaepernick when he decided initially to sit during the national anthem. That was going to be his form of protest. He was just going to sit on the bench. And here's what a lot of people don't realize, is that veteran Green Beret, Nate Boyer, who also after his service tried out for the NFL. So Nate Boyer said initially that, hey, I think that sitting during the national anthem, that's disrespectful. Now, he reached out to Colin Kaepernick, and they had a good conversation with each other, and Nate Boyer told him that if he wants to peacefully protest without being disrespectful, take a knee. So this movement was started by a veteran. Now, that's not to say that he speaks for all veterans, that he speaks for all military, but a service member told him, Colin Kaepernick, to take a knee during the anthem. Because many people take a knee when they're praying. Many people take a knee when, you know, someone's hurt, someone's out. There's many different reasons to take a knee. And many people are just ignoring that fact. They're saying that it's just flat out disrespectful. Now, whether you agree with what they do or not, because he started a trend. Tons of NFL players joined him in taking it. It became a huge issue. A huge issue. Because players from all over the NFL were doing the same thing. They were taking a knee during the national anthem. And a lot of teams kind of changed how they did it. You know, during last year's season, for example, the Dallas Cowboys, they, as an organization, you know, coaches, staff members, and the players all took a brief knee before the game, before the national anthem. That was their way of, you know, kind of being respectful to both sides, which is cool that they did what they wanted to do. There was a game, and it's already passed on me which teams they were, where neither team came out of the locker room during the national anthem. And that created controversy itself because the thing is with any of this, no matter how you look at it, someone's pissed off. Someone doesn't think it's right. Someone is just gonna use this to, for the lack of what better word, be a dick about it. And the point is that what this all started as was a form of protest. And what it is form of protest against, we'll get into a little bit later. But it's a form of protest, which is your First Amendment right. Freedom of speech. Colin Kaepernick or any of these other athletes are expressing their freedom of speech by taking a knee. It is nonviolent. It's just people are too caught up in the symbolism. And not only that, we have a president who is way too focused on it. And like I said, I'm not going to push my political beliefs as much as I can prevent myself from. Like I'll say again, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. But to me, the president of the United States should be concerned about a lot more other issues than if a player in the NFL is taking a knee or not. If he has time to worry about that, then I sure as hell hope that everything else is fixed. But it's not. And that's another episode. That's another conversation altogether. But having a president and politicians and whoever telling or speaking out saying, hey, you should be pissed about this. It's creating so much controversy and people are rallying behind that sort of movement to wage a war against athletes, you know, and it's anybody who has a Facebook account probably has a friend that has said that they're boycotting the NFL or they're glad that Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a team. And here's the deal. A lot of these people, not all of them, a lot of these people never served in the military. If I look through my Facebook account, I have dozens of friends on there that have not served in the military, have not held a political office or anything, but they act like this was that somebody just pooped in their yard. And that's the only analogy I can come up with right now. But the point is, once again, reversing to what I said, is that this is freedom of speech. If we want to wage a war on this, whether you like it or not, you are waging a war on the freedom of speech. If this was a violent protest, if this was a much, and I'm not even saying physically violent, if Colin Kaepernick, he could have went out and punched a cop because maybe he thought that might have been the way to, you know, stick up for his beliefs. But he didn't. There was plenty of other people that did. Maybe not punch a cop, but were violent toward policemen and women. That wasn't the way. What, if you don't agree with this, what do you agree with? What do you think is the best way to express that you have a concern with an issue? How do you expect someone to raise awareness for something? When it comes down to it, it's not the fact that people are upset with the kneeling. I think people are upset with the fact that somebody's protesting against something that they don't agree with. Kind of diving into the issue that sparked Colin Kaepernick's protesting was our country has had a huge surge in police shootings. A lot of it, with unarmed black victims. And like I said, that can be a whole other episode, and I'm sure someday it will be. But that was something that he wanted to bring awareness around, that we needed to have a peaceful protest to bring awareness to the issue. Because everybody knows that when these events were happening, there was riots on the streets, there was, you know, flipping cars, burning stuff, we all saw what happened. Every time there's been an event where an unarmed black person has been shot and killed by the police, it seems just about every time that the police have gotten away with it. And I want to be careful with how I word this, because I don't want to say that I'm disagreeing with the outcomes of these trials. I'm not saying that I agree with them. I'm saying at the moment, I don't know enough about them, and I don't think a lot of people know enough about them that we can truly speak on it. But if you have a peaceful protest against that issue, even if you're wrong, if you're doing it in a peaceful way, who cares? You're kneeling for a national anthem during a song is not meant to be disrespectful. If you ask any of these NFL players if they're protesting the military, if they're protesting the entire country, they would tell you no. They are protesting an issue that is wrong in the country. That is important because, like I said, if you agree with it or not, they have that right. If you are a true patriot, if you are someone that truly believes in our rights as American citizens, you should at least agree with what they're doing. Maybe not agree with it, but you should be able to at least agree that they have the right to. They have the right to protest. And if they're doing it in a peaceful way where nobody's getting hurt, there is no damage, then it is not worth the kind of controversy, the kind of conflicts that we have right now. It's ridiculous. It's not hurting you. It's, I don't know, I get worked up about it because I'm afraid that issues like this, or any issue going forward, we're going to start losing our rights as United States citizens. Because maybe it'd start out this way. Maybe they'll take away, you know, we'll still have freedom of speech, except for you can't kneel during the national anthem. You can't do that anymore. Then it has a slippery slope. Then we start losing other rights. So if you truly care about your rights, you have to be able to acknowledge that people have the right to do what they do. You don't have to agree with it. I'm not asking people to agree with everything I say. I'm not asking people to agree with what other people do. I want people to understand the consequences of trying to win wars and arguments that essentially have our rights at stake. So, having said that, I've kind of gotten long-winded myself. So, coming up after, well, I'd like to say after a break, but there's really not a break. I'm essentially just going to hit my stop button, and then I'm going to put the interview in here. That's what I'm going to do. And if you don't like it, eat me. It's just the way it is. I'm a little sassier in this episode. I think I'm getting a little bit more comfortable in front of this mic. Probably not a good deal. You never know. We'll see. Anyways, coming up, Chris Cluey. All right, this is Adam Jewell with the Break It Up podcast. On the phone with me right now, I have former NFL punter Chris Cluey. He played 8 seasons with the Minnesota Vikings. Chris, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
So this is pretty cool for me. I kind of did an intro piece to this. Now, and we'll get into kind of your time with the Vikings, but this is pretty cool for me because I am both I'm 50-50. I am a 50% Cincinnati Bengals fan, and I'm 50% Minnesota Vikings fan. So it's awesome that I'm able to talk to someone that, got to play, and that I actually got to watch play a few times while you're with it. So this is pretty cool for me, and I hope it's just as cool for you.
I gotta say, that's an interesting mix. Why Vikings and Bengals?
And I think it's important, and I screamed this in my intro, punters are people too. Why do punters get such a bad rep and people don't really care about punters? Like, they seem to think they're a dime a dozen.
I think a lot of people are under the impression that because they only see punters on the field rarely and we're not doing the same thing as everyone else, that it's something that you can just get up off your couch and go do. But, like, the thing is that pretty much every punter I've talked to in the NFL or met or whatever, like, we were the guys who, you know, we were the all-stars on our baseball team and our soccer teams and our basketball teams. And, like, we were we were really good in college as well on other sports. It's just we're not quite at the same level as the other NFL positions in the NFL, but we're still pretty athletic and good at what we do.
All right, so tell me a little bit. I know it could be a long story, but kind of give me – kind of a brief rundown of how your final year, how did it incorporate when you started to speak out on marriage equality in Minnesota? How did that kind of start, affecting your relationship with both, like, the Vikings and the league?
Like, I wouldn't say really politically active. Like, I mean, I just way about certain things, but it wasn't like I was, you know, going out and raising a bunch of noise or anything. But I realized when they asked me, you know, hey, is this something you'd be interested in, that, like, yeah, I would be interested in helping keep this amendment, because I don't think it's particularly good to enshrine discrimination into state law. And also I had the platform. And it was something, you know, it's not even so much that I had the platform to do so, it's also that I kind of had a responsibility to do so. Because the world that I want to live in is one where if I'm in trouble, someone will speak out for me. So in order to live in that world, if I see someone else in trouble, well, then I have to speak out for them and try to help them. And so really that's what kind of started the whole thing off. And at first it was pretty low-key. I did a couple of radio interviews, did like a local dinner fundraising thing. And then in, I think it was September, I wrote an article titled, "They Won't Magically Bring You Into a Lustful Cock Monster," which went viral, and that kind of put the whole thing on a national scale. And at that point, definitely my relations with the coaching staff took a turn for the worse, in that they thought that I was being distracted away from football. And I was like, nope, I'm perfectly capable of holding more than one thing in my mind at a time. And it ended up with me from the Vikings after that season. My statistics for that season were pretty much right in line with my statistics that I'd always had for the Vikings, and I set, I think, almost all of the team records for punting. So I was understandably a little miffed when they let me go, because I was like, wait a minute, the only thing that changed between this season and last season was that I started speaking out on this issue. And I know you guys don't like me speaking out on this issue, but you said that it was okay as long as my production stayed up, but yet somehow I got released. So, yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, I'm glad I did it. Like I said, the world I want to live in is one where people do speak out for each other. But, you know, that does require that people who are in positions of power, who do have the platforms, stand up and actually say something. And don't just be content to sit back and, you know, just be okay because they have everything that they need.
And I've been following you on... I've been following you on Twitter for a while, and like, I know you made the statement before that you said, and I'm paraphrasing here, that you could have made a lot more money by being quiet rather than speaking up for something you believed in. Do you think that there, I mean, obviously now we're seeing that with Colin Kaepernick and whatnot, but do you think that there's too many, well, I mean, obviously you worked with a lot of other players. Like, there's a lot of other players that are afraid to have that same stance.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there are a lot of players in the NFL, you know, who I would consider socially liberal. And, you know, a lot of them do really good work for, like, local communities and stuff like that. But the problem is that, you know, they understand that the owners collectively are a group of old, rich, white men who tend to be somewhat racist and bigoted. So if they speak up, the owners are probably going to kick them out of the league, as what happened to me, as what happened to Colin. And, you know, and you're starting to see it happen with other guys too. But like, it's one of those things where, you know, it sometimes you just have to risk it, right? Like you have to decide, okay, can I live with myself having not said anything? And I understand why guys don't say anything, why they do stay silent, because you can't get a job that's like the NFL anywhere but the NFL, right? Like, you can't go down to the local street corner and be like, okay, where's another NFL team for me?
Right.
There's only one NFL. So, you know, I understand why guys stay silent, but I really wish more athletes would use their platform to speak up and say something, because, you know, as athletes, we do hold a fairly outsized position in the social conscience, or social consciousness. And, you know, that's something that you can really do a lot of good if you take advantage of it.
In your opinion, I guess I don't know how to, like, formulate this question, where this is more, maybe it's not even a question, maybe it's just me complaining about something, that, you know, I've watched the NFL for the past however 10 years or so, and you see in your situation where, yeah, they claim it was performance based or whatever that you got released, but a lot of a lot of things point to it was you kind of speaking out. But it bothers me that they have a lot of NFL owners, and even, like, I guess the league itself, has no problem looking the other way when, say, Ray Rice beats up his girlfriend in an elevator. Or, I mean, domestic violence is all over the NFL. It seems like it pops up every other week. Drug abuse and drinking and driving and stuff. They have no problem turning the other way for that. But do you think that they're willing to look the other way on enough stuff if you can, let's say, give them a better, like, a good return? Like, we already talked that punters kind of get the short end of the stick a lot of times, but do you think, like, say if Tom Brady came out, now this is purely hypothetical, I want to make sure I'm not putting anything on record that saying I'm saying that he said something, but say, like, he came out and said something extremely racist or something like that. Do you think it would even matter to the league if he did, because he's Tom Brady?
I don't think it would. And I think the difference in what you're looking for in terms of between, like, DUIs and domestic violence and all the other stuff that the owners are willing to turn a blind eye to, is that I believe it's because the owners can see themselves in that position where they're like, okay, well, yeah, you know, yeah, that's not bad, but as a football player, and, you know, well, maybe I've, you know, had some issues like that, or I know someone that's had some issues like that. So it's something that they can see themselves in, and so they're more willing to turn that blind eye, whereas stuff like racial inequality or sexual inequality is not something they can put themselves in that position. Where they can't say to themselves, this would personally affect me, and so they don't want to be part of that conversation. And unfortunately, there's not a lot we can do to make them be part of that conversation because they have a lot of money. Money buys you a lot of protection.
Absolutely. And I was kind of reading an article, or I was actually reading one of your articles about your situation with the Vikings. Now, if I read it correctly, Ziggy Wilf, was he on your side with this situation, or was it more like showing face that he was on your side?
As far as I know, Ziggy was on my side in terms of talking to me publicly and saying, hey, you know, I appreciate the letter. Now, I can't be 100% sure on that because at the end of the day, I did get let go by the Vikings. Although I will say, Ziggy wasn't necessarily an owner who takes a big interest in the day-to-day running of the team. So, you know, I don't know how much of that was his decision, how much of it was he just signed off on something that the head coach and the GM wanted to do. So, I think that most of the owners that would consider themselves progressive, probably are progressive when it suits them and when it affects their bottom line, or when it can be seen as perceived to be affecting their bottom line, then I think their progressive tendencies kind of go away.
So basically, if they don't have to show themselves being these open-minded people, they're not going to go out of their way to do it.
Yeah, I don't think they necessarily need to, and I don't think they necessarily want to. I think they regard it as a business first and foremost, and if it'll get them good PR, they'll do it. Witness Jerry Jones kneeling with his team, making it all about him, and then the very next week saying, okay, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like how tone deaf you have to be to think that, okay, we solved racism, hooray. Like, but yeah, I really think that for them it's more a matter of, and I hate this word, optics, and, you know, how it'll be publicly perceived.
So moving on with moving on to the whole kneeling situation, when it first started, it was like, you know, people talked about it a little bit, and there's articles about it, and it was more of a debate at first, like, oh, is this the right thing to do? Maybe not. But then it seemed like when we got our, you know, genius in chief of the United States, that it had to become a much bigger issue than it started with. Why has it blown up so much, and why is it such a polarizing issue, in your opinion?
I think because it provides a very clear and distinctive sort of marker point for how you view the United States, sort of a society as a whole within the United States. Because if you're a, you know, middle class, slightly better off, you know, working class or rich white person, you think the United States is great. Like, this is a fantastic place to live. And the police are great to you. Sure, you might get pulled over, but you show them your ID card, you show them your registration, you're fine. You go on with your day. If you're a person of color, you live in the United States, then your view of the United States might be a little bit different. Because every time you get pulled over, there's a risk that you will die. And I don't know about you, but I don't think I would want to live that way. I think that would signify something very, very wrong with the society that I live in. And so I think with what Kaepernick is doing is that it's really brought to the forefront of the public discussion that, hey, there is still a very huge problem with racism in the United States. Like, yeah, we fought a civil war a couple hundred years ago, but that didn't just magically fix everything. Like, there's still ramifications of that going on to this day. And if you look at there's a great article out today from Mother Jones, actually, where they looked at the for-profit prison system and how it is directly derived from slave owners. Like, the guy who owns the largest for-profit prison system in the United States, his ancestors were slave owners. And they took that money and turned it into for-profit prisons after the Civil War happened. Like, there's this backdrop within America of racial tension that we as a country really have not come to grips with, and we need to, because if we don't, then these conflicts are just going to keep happening over and over and over, and they should keep happening, because if all our citizens, all our American citizens who pay taxes and serve in our military, if they're not all free to live their lives just as equal as everyone else, well then how can we claim that we're a nation of equals?
Absolutely, and would you say, if this was happening while you were playing, would you be one of the players that knelt?
Oh, for sure. My wife and I were actually talking about that the other day. That she was saying, you know, if you hadn't gotten kicked out for the Kinshack merge stuff, you definitely would have gotten kicked out for the kneeling stuff. I was like, yep, you're 100% right.
Does that like kind of bother you a little bit that this is more of a personal question towards you, Billy. Does that piss you off that a lot of these guys, I mean, they're getting in a lot of trouble, they're getting a lot of flack, but they're still going out and getting on the field every time. They're just being attacked by social media warriors and whatnot, but I mean, they still get to go out every Sunday. But, you know, back in 2012, your issue, or your, not your issue, but your vocalization kind of got you in some deep water and may have been the reason you didn't get picked up again.
No, not really, because it was a conversation that I had with myself when I first thought about taking on the same-sex marriage issue, was that, you know, I tried to have a real honest conversation with myself with, okay, what are the potential outcomes of, you know, taking this stance? And one of them was, you will never play in the NFL again. And so then I had to decide, okay, am I comfortable accepting that consequence if it happens? Because it does have the chance of happening. And as it turns out, it was what happened. And I was okay with it, because at the end of the day, no matter how much we love football, no matter how much we love any sport, they're just a children's game. This shit is not important at all. And I realize that's fair to say to a lot of football fans, but, like, it's true. It really isn't important. You know, when you look at the state of the world, when you look at the things that matter, things like our public infrastructure or our schooling system or our hospitals, like, those are things that matter. 11 guys running around out on a field in tights giving each other hugs, like, that doesn't matter. So,
but it's fun to watch.
I wished I could have kept playing, but at the end of the day, I would rather put my society first and a children's game way down the line rather than have that children's game come first to the detriment of the society that allows it to exist.
I think that applies with just about any aspect of our society, and not just necessarily sports. I think there's a lot of people that put their careers first before their mortals, you know, whatever they may be, and are too afraid to take the side of, or let's just say be on the right side of history, because they don't want it to affect their income, their reputation, their whatever it may be. You could be a big business owner, and we're seeing that right now. We're seeing that with, say, Nike right now, where now Nike is in, well, they say, a lot of people say Nike's in trouble, but I think they just showed today that their stocks went back up. So, I guess I don't know where I'm going with that statement, but it's just, when you watch it,
I think
just,
what it is that people have difficulty recognizing the structures that allow them to have the things that they have. So, for example, in our current society, the reason why you are allowed to have that job, making that money, doing the things that you want to do, is because we live in a stable society where you don't have to worry about, you know, driving down the street in the middle of a war zone, like what's happening in Syria or Yemen. You don't have to worry about chronic food shortages, like what's happening in various regions in Africa. Like, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff. But most people don't think about that because they just take it for granted that, yes, this is the place that we live. That's how it should be, without recognizing things can change very, very quickly. Like, if you study history at all, you see civilizations collapse pretty much overnight, relatively speaking. Like, now, overnight isn't, you know, you snap your fingers like Thanos and the next day it's gone. It's more a couple years, decade, whatever. But in terms of geologic time, historical time, like, that is pretty much overnight. And you have to constantly be wary of that and be fighting against that. Otherwise, that cush job, that sport team, that stadium, those can go away. Go take a tour of the Colosseum in Rome if you don't believe me. Because at one time, that was football.
Right. And kind of continuing with that is, what would you say, and I'm sure you have said it before, because, I mean, you're not a person that holds back on your statements, you know, and I mean that in a good way by all means. You know, I followed you on Twitter, and I'm thoroughly amused by a lot of the stuff I see you post, because I know a lot of people try to start shit with you that they immediately can't back up. So I have to say I'm pretty amused when I watch some of the stuff you put on Twitter. But what do you say to the guy that's sitting at home and thinks that all NFL players or athletes are just spoiled and they have nothing, or they don't appreciate anything they have, and they don't contribute, and they shouldn't be getting involved in politics, and they should just shut up?
Well, the problem is that whatever you want to say to that guy sitting at home, I'm picturing in my mind probably like middle 40s, slightly balding guy, bit of a beer gut, sitting on his recliner, watching TV. That's about the picture I have in my mind. The problem is you can't say anything to that guy that will make him change his mind. The thing you have to say is to a child, when they're growing up, when they're in school, here's how the world works. Here's why it's important to treat each other with respect and empathy. Because generally, as people grow older, they find it much harder to change their views. It's when you're a kid that you're really kind of plastic and malleable, and you can switch up your viewpoint when you're presented with new information. And so, like, a big part of the problem in our country right now is the fact that we're dealing with decades of pretty much destruction of our education system, where we have not prioritized teachers, we have not prioritized education. So you get people who grow up and they think all those things that you just said, you know, that athletes are spoiled, that they don't do anything, that they don't help. And the problem is that those people don't know how to go online and search for the facts that would refute their point. because the vast majority of athletes in the NFL do give back to their communities. They do have charitable organizations. They give a pretty decent amount of money away. And the thing is, like, all that data is right there online, fairly easy to find if you know how to run a Google search, but if you've never been taught how to run an optimized Google search, well, then how are you going to know? You don't. It doesn't just magically appear in your brain.
Well, that, and I believe it's important to acknowledge that not every NFL player gets, what is that, like $140 million, like what Aaron Rodgers and Khalil Mack just made?
Yeah, for sure. Like, and that's the thing, is that people see the big contracts and they extrapolate that to the rest of the players in the league. But, like, league minimum when I came in was, I think, $270,000. Now I think it's up to, like, $380,000 or $400,000, something like that, which, to be fair, that is a lot of money. Like, that is more than 90% of Americans will earn, you know, throughout the course of a decade, let alone a year. So, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Like, that's still a great amount of money. However, when you compare that to, you know, the $50 million signing bonuses or, you know, the $140 million over 6 years, like, it's not even in the same ballpark. And the vast majority of NFL players are the ones who are playing for minimum contracts, a little bit above minimum, maybe a decent deal, but that's probably the only deal they'll see. So they'll make $5-6 million after taxes, comes out to about 3.5-4. And then the other thing you have to keep in mind is that as an NFL player, you generally don't have any other job skills. Because the majority of your life has been spent playing football. And when you're done playing football, the only place you can really transfer those job skills is like being maybe a bouncer at a club.
Like, right.
There's not a lot of call for physical violence within normal society. And so that's something where, okay, now you have to figure out what else you're going to do with the rest of your life, and you have to be careful with your money. Because if you're not, if you spend it all within the first 3 years, well, okay, great. Now you're 30, 33 years old. You're broke. You're used to living with a lot of money, but now you don't have any of that money anymore, and you don't have any job skills. What are you going to do with your life?
See, I think that the NFL needs to add a league, like, for, like, the senior players. Like, I'm talking, like, 45-plus, and that's, like, you'd be young if you're doing 45-plus. Like, I want to see Brett Favre get back in there. I want to see, like, Joe Montana and just all these guys get back in there and play like a physical game. Like, I think it'd be amusing to watch them. I mean, I'm sure these guys could still do their job, well, just at a much slower pace.
Yeah, so I would say my caveat for that would be you probably want it to be flag football at that point, because football takes a pretty hefty toll on your body. Mm-hmm. And especially as you grow older, you don't heal quite as fast. And I mean, I just found that out last night when I was playing soccer, where I went to push off to go start sprinting to try to cover a guy, and my calf, I just strained it. Just for whatever reason, calf decided, nope, doesn't want to work anymore. And so, like, it's just one of those things where you have to weigh, okay, what is the entertainment value of this versus what is the harm it's causing the participants? And, you know, I think that's actually a discussion that America is having right now with football, because we're starting to realize, okay, here are the actual costs of football. You know, here's what actually happens to guys who play this game for a long time. And are we as a society okay with that?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm almost 30 years old, and sometimes when I, like, hear about some of these, you know, older players, like, saying how long they want to play for, like, I feel like I'm, like, a 70-year-old mother who's just, like, they're going to be hurting. Like, why would they do that? Like, I'm concerned for them. Like, I'm not the one that's getting millions of dollars to keep playing, but it's just, like, I feel like a lot of, and I'm sure you've known plenty of players that after they retired, like, and just like you're saying, probably regretted the length of their time playing, just because I mean I gotta think, like, a guy like Emmett Smith or Barry Sanders, they probably are feeling it to this day, you know, like the kind of game that they played.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, there is, on the flip side, I will say this: you don't make it to the NFL unless you have that competitive drive that forces you forward no matter what. Like, if you have to have that drive. You essentially, you have to be willing to lie to yourself and say, I can do this, even if you don't know if you can or not. And from what I've seen playing high school, college, professional sports, the thing that is the difference between those who make it and those who don't is that those who make it are those who can convince themselves that they can do things they otherwise didn't think they would be able to do. And, you know, it's the problem is you have to learn how to separate that from the sport that you're playing and the rest of the life that you're living. Because I think that's also one of the reasons why so many guys getting, you know, DUIs and having problems is that for their entire life, they've managed to convince themselves, I can beat the odds. Because becoming an NFL player, like, it's a 0.001% chance. Like, you essentially win the lottery if you make it to the NFL. And so if you get into that mindset of, well, yeah, of course I can beat the odds because I've always beaten the odds, then eventually that's going to backfire on you if you take that outside of your sport. So I think for the older players, there's probably that regret of, yeah, my body hurts and it sucks. I mean, I have some of that myself. Like, I had 4 knee surgeries from football, and I know once I start hitting my 40s and 50s, like, that's not going to feel good. But at the same time, you have to counter that with the, I was the best at what I did, and I made it. and it's just that desire to keep proving that, I think, drives a lot of those players to keep playing.
But, I mean, society, going back to what we were saying, society doesn't think you guys, you know, do anything other than just play a game, and that, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, talk about important things, though.
Yeah, so actually that is one of the interesting things, I think, about sports in general and, you know, football as part of that is that, yeah, there are downsides to football. Like, there are obviously a lot of negatives to football, but at the same time, like, you learn so much about yourself in terms of what you are capable of and what you can do when you work with other people. And I think that is what sports is supposed to be about. Like, learning those things, learning, okay, I've pushed myself to my limit. I have found that limit. This is where I could go. Because most people will never find that limit, right? Like, in your everyday life, like, you're not going to have to discover how fast can I run and for how long. Like, unless you've been chased by a cheetah or something, which usually doesn't happen in an office park. So, you know, that's one of the really good things about sports, is it allows you to know yourself better. It allows you to know what you can and can't do. But the problem is then we start building in all the other crap that goes with it. Like, okay, because you're a public face, because you're the figure in this organization, you can't talk about things that matter, as if that'll somehow take away from the game. Like, that's the BS that we need to push back against, because, yeah, we're athletes, but first and foremost, we're human beings, and we live in the same society as everyone else. It doesn't matter what your job is. Your primary interest should be, what is the society I'm living in, and is it healthy or not?
Absolutely, and, I mean, I'm really glad to hear you say that, and I'm seeing that more and more, athletes are speaking out on, I mean, right now the big one that a lot of athletes obviously are speaking out against, and like you mentioned before, is, I mean, there is a surge in, you know, police brutality issues, or just, I mean, discrimination in general. Like, there's just a lot of it going on, and people or players are simply, you know, they're taking and eating an anthem to, as a peaceful, I want to, like, reiterate that, that is a peaceful form of protest that a former vet, Nate Boyer, suggested Colin Kaepernick do. A lot of people want to ignore that fact, by the way. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Oh, yeah, no. The guy was a Ranger or Green Beret?
Green Beret. Okay. He was the one that did a couple tours overseas, and then, you know, he got a shot to, I believe, play long snapper. You know, he went Falcons and Seahawks. I can't remember, but, you know, they gave him a shot, which was awesome. I mean, that's a very cool thing for a team to do. But I mean, a person from the military said to Colin Kaepernick, hey, if you want to find a respectful way to do this, take a knee. And Colin Kaepernick was all about it. But people want to ignore that and continue to believe that kneeling is blatant disrespect against the military.
As if any of them have served a day in their life.
It's, and I bring a lot of my own problems into my recording because I have so many conservative friends and family that, like, when you try to tell them, like, hey, this is freedom of speech, this is, you know, he's allowed to do this, and he's not being violent. I mean, you know, definitely, like, when, I mean, we saw it in a lot of the riots that show, you know, the peaceful way to get a point across is not to, you know, throw chairs inside, you know, small businesses. That's not the right way to protest. But if a guy were to take a knee and people asked him why you did that, then he has a chance to speak on it, and a lot of people can see it. Like, it's like, which one would you prefer to see? Would you rather see thousands of people in the street throwing shit, starting stuff on fire, or would you rather just have, you know, a role model be able to say, hey, we should take a look at this issue?
Yeah, well, and that gets back to the whole education thing that I talked about earlier, is that what a lot of people don't understand is that these things tend to follow, like, in any sort of social unrest generally tends to follow a certain pattern, and that first it will be a peaceful addressing of grievances. So it'll be, okay, this isn't right. We as a subcommunity within this culture are being afflicted by something negative. We'd like you to fix. And then the society has one or two options. They can either choose to fix it or they can ignore it. So if they ignore it, then it starts to escalate. Now, instead of being a peaceful addressing of grievances, it becomes a more forceful addressing of grievances. Because the people who are being persecuted now understand that the society is not willing to talk with them, so they have to do other things to make themselves heard. That's where you start getting into, you know, situations of violence, of social unrest. And then if that still doesn't get things addressed, then you move into all-out conflict, because human beings at their core tend to have a very simple view of the world, and that they want to be able to do the same things that their neighbor is doing. Right. If you boil down human nature, like, that's pretty much what it comes out to. Is my neighbor able to buy a big screen TV? I would like to buy a big screen TV. That's humanity in a nutshell. So when it comes to social issues like this, like, it behooves us as a society to take a serious look at, okay, this is a problem. Police brutality within America, this is a problem that we need to address. And if we don't address it, things aren't going to magically go away just because we don't want to address the problem. They're going to continue to get worse. So let's address it now and skip the awful steps to come next, and everyone's life will be better off.
Now, a few months ago, our president came out and said that he's willing to talk to any of these athletes about this issue. So, I mean, have you tried to give him a call?
I'm afraid that I use words that have more than one syllable, so I don't think he'd understand me. and I don't have any crayons nearby to draw pictures. But, yeah, no, I think that is grandstanding of the highest order, because if you have seen anything that Trump has said or done, it is always about him first and how he can make himself feel better. So he has no legitimate want to actually address these issues. And I think there was a thing that came out, was it like 2 or 3 days ago, where it was leaked from inside his administration that the only thing he regrets is caving in to the people who told him to condemn the white nationalists at Charlotte. It's like, if that's your only regret, you have serious problems. First and foremost, you're a fucking Nazi. Get that shit out of here. So, yeah, I don't think he has any interest in talking at all with any athlete who wants to talk about these issues.
You know that face that you make, like when you walk into a room and it smells like someone just ripped a huge fart, and like you just have that face, like, what the hell is that? Like, that's the face I make whenever I read an article that has something to do with him. I'm just like, what? I feel like every article is written by The Onion, but then I realize it's like AP News and CNN and Fox and all. I'm just like, oh, this is real. Like, this is actually going on. Like,
yeah. Well, and so, you know, not to keep banging the same drum, but like, that's people need to understand, like, that's how quickly things can unwrap. Like, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, would we have thought that the headlines we would be seeing are the ones we're seeing today? Absolutely not. Like, no one could have imagined that in their wildest fever dream. But that's where we're at, because we as a society have allowed that to happen because we haven't addressed the underlying issues within our culture, which is the fact that racism is still a huge problem. Education is not being treated as seriously as it needs to be, and until we address those things, then it's not going to magically fix itself. Like, we have to make a determined effort to fix these things, and it's going to be hard.
So to go back towards sports and the locker room and whatnot, I kind of told you before I hit the record button, obviously we've talked that there's, you know, there's a lot of, athletes just get a bad rep no matter how you spin it. But like, can you tell me a personal story or maybe a few, whatever, of how you've seen like great positivity from either like teammates or athletes that you've known, you know, stuff that maybe they're doing that we just don't see enough articles written about, you know, what you've obviously done a lot of work yourself and, the push for, you know, marriage equality and whatnot. But I mean, as far as some of your teammates, like charities and stuff like that, like what have you seen personally that you are just amazed to see that we don't get to see?
Yeah, so I've actually got a perfect one. It was back in 2009, either 2009, 2010. Our kicker at the time, Ryan Longwell, me and him became pretty good friends, and he lived in Florida, and so there was a local car wash in his community where, you know, they're trying to raise money for the school, and there was a tragic accident during the car wash where one of the people somehow, like in their car, their foot slipped, they hit their accelerator and pinned the girl up against a wall, and she ended up having to get her legs amputated. So I mean, like this was like a horrible thing to have happen, and so Ryan took it upon himself to do his own fundraiser to help the family pay for medical expenses and, you know, help get this girl like back to a normal life. And I mean, there was no news coverage of it. There were no articles. There was nothing going on. It was just he saw that there was someone in trouble, and he wanted to do something to help. And, you know, I think if you talked to all the athletes in the NFL, I think you find a lot of similar stories where guys are giving back to the communities that they live in, the communities where they're at, because they understand they've been very, very fortunate to have the job that they have, to make the amount of money that they do. And if they can give that back, if they can, you know, help someone else make their life a little bit better, then it just makes our entire world better.
And like you said, that's a story I'd never heard before, but it's one that just, it's awesome to hear, because like you said, and everybody knows that, you know, the news wants to report on stuff that's shocking, or when, you know, basically when you have some dirt on somebody, that's when they want to report it. But I mean, there's not enough people, you know, that are going out reporting, you know, the feel good stories, the like, hey, this is a good role model in this community. But because, you know, it's not as fun as writing about, you know, some basketball player punching his girlfriend or something. Like it just doesn't sell as well, I guess. But I mean, that's the stuff I personally like to read more, is like knowing that these athletes that I see on TV, and, you know, even as an almost 30-year-old, I consider them role models, even though now so many of them are younger than me, and that kind of pisses me off. But
yeah, that's the problem, is that we all keep growing older, but the average age of the NFL remains the same.
You know, every time I watch the draft, like, I see these kids coming out of college or whatever, and they still look older than me somehow, and I don't understand how it works. Like, maybe I have a bad perception of myself, or that it's just, I guess when you see like a 6'7", you know, linebacker or something coming out that's built like a shit brick house, that you're just like, yeah, that guy's probably like 40. But it's like, yeah. It's like, no, he's 19.
That's a good living 40.
Yeah. So I'll ask you one more question, like a fun one. We don't have to go through the serious stuff the whole time. So nowadays, I know you're doing a few different things, but I know that you're a huge nerd. So tell me about the nerd stuff you do. You're a gamer, right?
Oh, yes, I am a gigantic nerd. Like, it's funny because, you know, people always want to talk to me about football stuff, and I enjoyed playing football because it was something that I was good at, but the things that I like to do are all nerd stuff. So, like, I'm a huge science fiction fantasy reader. I love playing video games. I've been doing that my entire life. And I love tabletop gaming, miniature gaming. I actually, for a couple seasons, I played a tabletop game called War Machine, which is a battle, essentially miniature armies against each other. And I would paint my miniatures in the locker room because I'd have downtime. So like, well, what else am I going to do than paint miniatures in the middle of an NFL locker room? So I got some interesting questions on on that. But yeah, no. Right now, I am engaged in a variety of different nerdery things. I'm the lead designer and creator of a tabletop card game called Twilight of the Gods. We just successfully did our second Kickstarter, and we're looking forward to doing our third Kickstarter for another expansion set. Basically, it's a dueling deck-building card game, kind of similar to Magic the Gathering or Yu-Gi-Oh! Pokemon, where you just pretty much face off against someone else, and then you play cards, use various abilities, see who ends up winning. So that's been pretty cool. I also write. I have written a couple books. One nonfiction is called Beautifully Unique Sparks Ponies. That's a collection of essays and short stories. A science fiction book that I self-published called Prime. Me and my buddy Andy co-wrote that. We have the sequel to that finished. We just haven't published it yet. And then I've been working on a book that's going to be published by Tor, I think next year, and I'm really excited to when I'll actually be able to talk about that, because I think it's a really cool book, and I think people will really like it, because essentially the feedback I've gotten from people who've read it is that it's like Ready Player One, but good. Like, well, thank you. That's amazing. And I'm not joking with you. Like, I've heard that from three separate people who don't know each other. So I'm very excited as to how that one's going to be received. But that's pretty much how I fill my days. And then other than that, I'm a stay-at-home dad, take care of my kids, and it's just trying to live life one day at a time.
So how does have you always been a nerd? Like, did, like, usually the stereotypical thing is, like, you know, the nerdy kid in high school, but, like, what were you doing in high school that you were also, like, on the football team as well? Usually it's, you know, the nerdy kids don't get to play on the football team.
Yeah. So it's hilarious that you say that, because I definitely was the nerdy kid on the football team. Growing up, I have terrible vision, so I had to wear glasses. Like, and I'm talking about like the half inch thick, like Coke bottle glasses. And I wore those all the way up until my senior year. That was when I started wearing contacts, because that was when I became aware, oh, hey, maybe I should be interested in girls or someone else. But, my high school football coach actually, had to tell me to stop reading on the sideline. Because I would take books to the game, because I was like, well, you know, I'm only punting on fourth down. There's all this other wasted time. I need to entertain myself. I'm going to read a book. So I did stop reading on the sidelines. However, I did read on the bus to and from the games, because we're on a bus. What else are you going to do?
Yeah, that's inspirational on a whole other level. I mean, you know, this is the kind of message you'd want to send to some of the kids now. That's like, I'm more into, you know, World of Warcraft. I'm into anime, stuff like that. That's stereotypically the nerdy stuff. And I'd be like, you know, look at Chris Cluey. The guy was into the same kind of thing, and he ended up in the NFL.
and that's one thing that's always driven me crazy. It's like, you don't have to pigeonhole yourself into any one thing. Like, we're human beings. We're complex. We're allowed to like different things. Like, there's all these false divisions within our society where it's like, oh, if you're a jock, then that means you can't be a geek. Or, you know, like, it's just everywhere, but it doesn't have to be that way. Like, you're allowed to like what you like. I mean, and there's so much overlap between various things. And, wow, look at fantasy football. Like, that's essentially D&D, but with sports. you are creating your party, and you are sending them out, and you're seeing how well they do.
Like, and it gets intense. I am an intense fantasy football player. Like, it's like you don't talk to people. Like if you don't talk to your coworkers or your friends if you're in the same league with them. It's war.
Right. So I mean, with everyone nerds out about something. Like, and that was a conversation I actually had with a lot of guys in the locker room. Where, you know, I mean, they would come up to me, be like, what are those miniatures you're painting? I would explain to them, here's the game system, here's what it is, here's what they're for. And they'd be like, why are you even asking that? I'm like, well, why do you spend 6 hours a day going fishing during the summer? Because you really like fishing. That's what you nerd out about. Like, we're all allowed to have our interests. And it doesn't matter if our interests aren't the same. Like, it's okay to have different interests. Just let people be who they are.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, I've taken up more of your time than I thought that I would, and I apologize for that. Typically, I've been trying to keep it about that, like, 45-minute thing, and I think we're at an hour right now, but...
Yeah, no worries. I tend to go on, so...
No, I my fault than yours. This is fun for me, because, like I said, it's... I don't want to be, like, someone that just asks... You know, goes from a script and just tries to ask questions and gets one. You know, I try to make this podcast more like conversation and, you know, learn about, you know, the people that I talk to and talk about issues and especially with you. And the thing I appreciate about this one is that in a very lighthearted sense, like not everything, even if you're talking about a serious subject, it doesn't have to be so, I don't know, aggressive in a sense. Like, I mean, we've been able to laugh about a lot of the stuff, which is what our society needs, is to be able to take on serious subjects and be able to laugh at the same time with it.
That's sorry, not to drag this on any further, but that is one thing I have noticed with the stuff that I've written, is that people generally will remember what you're trying to tell them if you can make them laugh. Because they'll want to tell their friends why they were laughing about something, and then their friend will ask, well, what was the rest of it? And then, boom, now they're in a discussion about whatever it was, the initial point that you were trying to make. And I saw that happen with my first article that went viral on Deadspin, the Russell Cockmaster one. Like, it was, people initially were like, oh, this guy's swearing, it's amazing, like, he comes up with these words. But then it metamorphosized into a discussion about same-sex marriage, about LGBTQ rights, about things that actually are important. So the humor is important to us as human beings, because without humor, like, if you can't laugh at yourself, who are you going to laugh at? Like, you have to be able to laugh. And it's also a defense against the cruel, uncaring nature of the universe. I mean, we're on a rock surrounding an ongoing explosion in the middle of nothing. And there's so many ways the universe tries to kill us. But yet here we are, talking on the phone, having a conversation, laughing about stuff. Like, I mean, you have to be able to laugh.
So, in conclusion, how can people keep in touch with you? Do you want to give out some of your info? I mean, I can give them your cell phone number if you want me to. I mean, I'll throw that out.
Let's try not to do that particular one. I was already doxxed once during Gamergate, so I'm going to avoid repeating that experience. But yeah, no, if people want to find me, generally Twitter is the best way to go, despite it being an obnoxious hell site full of Nazis. I am on Twitter at Chris Warcraft. So that's me.
And, you know, it's something I'm going to suggest to you with all this gaming that you do. I mean, why don't you do the Twitch thing or the YouTube thing?
So I stream sporadically. Like, I've had an offer from Twitch to be an affiliate, but the problem is I just don't do it on a regular enough schedule because, A, I don't care enough to want to do it on a regular schedule, and B, I have kids.
Kids ruin everything, don't they?
Yeah, I know. They're terrible. They're the worst. but it's really hard to keep to a consistent streaming schedule when all of a sudden it's like, oh, after school activities every day of the week.
Occasionally
I'll stream, and if I do, I announce it on my Twitter account. But yeah, I'm not too worried about it. Like, if people want to tune in, they can. If not, that's not off my back.
Chris, thank you again for joining me, and like I said, you're my second guinea pig with this, and I'm hoping that as this progresses that I can get you to come back and we can keep talking about this kind of stuff, because God knows that we're not done as a society with some of the problems, and you're a very intelligent person. There's more to you than just being an athlete in the NFL. I mean, you're very well-educated. You're extremely funny. I mean, like I said, you gave your Twitter, and I hope people follow that too, because it's very funny for me to follow you on that. And you're just you're a good person from what I've read about you and just this hour-long conversation we've had. So I'm really hoping that I can have you back on someday, and I'm hoping you'd want to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I had a good time, and you've got my contact info, so just let me know.
Yep, it's, like I said, I'm going to, when I post this up, I'll post your cell phone, your Twitter, and just everything. Just to,
Whole address, I think, too, don't forget
I
that.
I think everyone should be able to get a hold of you, because you're such a great guy.
I appreciate that.
I'll make sure that they, around that 3 in the morning mark is, like, the best time to get a hold of you.
Yeah, that's usually the best. I hate sleep. Sleep is lame.
Especially as a parent, right?
Yep.
All right, man. I will let you go. Thanks again for doing this, and I hope to talk to you again soon, man. Once again, that was my interview with Chris Cluey. It was great to be able to do that interview and have him on the show. I look forward to being able to reach out to him again. As this is a little bit longer than I thought it would be, I'm going to wrap this up very quickly, but I do want to reiterate, you can get a hold of Chris Cluey on Twitter at Chris Warcraft. And also, if you'd go on Google, go on Amazon, you can find his books. Just type in Chris Cluey on Amazon, and you will find his books right on the top. Also, his card game that he spoke of is Twilight of the Gods. You can find that at various gaming outlets as well. I encourage you guys to check those out and support him and his movement. In conclusion, guys, I will see you again in another episode. Thank you guys again for your support. And, yeah, we'll see you again. Thank you.